Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock on Tuesday, September 20th, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juno afternoon. Today we'll find out about this October's Great Pumpkin Festival with our guest Brenda Krause. We'll also get the details about Rainforest Yoga's fundraiser, Bamboo Asana. U.S. Professor Alex Twitchell will be here to highlight the upcoming Native film series. We'll talk to Kristen Bartlett from the school district about the voluntary drug testing program. That writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more today on a Juno afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, looks like rain, low temperatures around 47 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, more rain with high temperatures around 53 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday night, rain heavy at times. And Thursday looks like rain likely with high temperatures around 52 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A three-day mining conference recently brought together tribes, government officials, and mining company representatives to the Bad River Reservation in Wisconsin. Mike Simonson has more on the gathering.
New mines are being proposed in the Lake Superior watershed of Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. If not regulated or operated correctly, all of these mines could pollute Lake Superior. U.S. Geological Survey Conference organizer Perry Jones hopes this meeting prevents that with strong state permitting regulations.
There's some that are questionable, and it varies from state to state, and that's part of the what we're presenting is we have people who have information on various permitting applications in the three different states we're looking at.
Representatives from Ontario's Aboriginal peoples also were at the conference. Jones says this whole region has a stake in this, since areas that weren't profitable for mining now are.
Because mineral prices are up, there's more interest in trying to develop more mines. As the prices of minerals go up, so do the availability of mines from the standpoint of being economically feasible, because the lower grade deposits become more of an interest.
Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission Environmental Officer John Coleman says the need to talk about all the consequences of opening a mine is important, including the economic downside.
Jobs that may or may not get generated by the mining project, and when mining projects close down, what happens to those jobs and those people that are dependent on those jobs.
For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
A healing totem pole is on a three-week journey across the country, traveling from Seattle, Washington, to the National Library of Medicine on the East Coast. Eilish O'Neill attended the blessing last week prior to the totem's departure and has this report.
That's Northwest Medicine Horse at the totem pole's blessing ceremony at the Seattle Center. Jewel Praying Wolf James, a member of the Lummi Nation and the head carver for the House of Tears Carvers, designed the totem.
This is a totem pole that's carved out of old-growth cedar. And, you know, when it came down, we prayed for it. It's 20 feet long. On the bottom, we have an 8-foot image of a Native American woman holding a basket. That's Basket Woman. But we also put a shell necklace on her, carved a shell necklace. That's White Shell Woman. So that incorporates some of the creation mythology of the Navajo Nation.
James also included the medicine woman in the moon as part of his design.
On top is an image of the Indian woman in the moon. She's a medicine woman, and it's Algonquin myth. She could cure anything by going out and getting the proper plants.
The healing totem pole will come to rest at the Native Voices exhibit at the National Library of Medicine. Dr. John Lindbergh is the library's director.
Come and listen. You can take away a little improved understanding, as well as some sympathy. But you'd be welcome anytime.
The exhibit opens October 6th and will remain open for 2 years. For National Native News, I'm Eilish O'Neill in Seattle, Washington.
A former Ute Mountain Ute tribal chairman has died after a motorcycle accident in Colorado. Police say Ernest House Sr. was killed over the weekend when his motorcycle slammed into a car after the car tried to pass another vehicle. House served the tribe on and off for more than 30 years. The Durango Herald reports his most recent project was working with a U.S. congressman to have a tribute read on the House floor for his father, Chief Jack House, the tribe's last traditional chief. Services for House Sr. are planned for Saturday. During this week in 2008, then-Senator Barack Obama met with tribal leaders from across the country in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Obama said he'd protect sovereignty and improve health care and education if elected president. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sinosky, Chambers, Saxe, Anderson, Miller, and Munson.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guests are Brenda Krause and Joe Dawson here to talk about the Great Pumpkin Festival State Fair, scheduled for Saturday, October 8th at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center from 10 to 5. Brenda and Joe, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you as well. This is our moment-to-moment update on the Great Pumpkin Festival, AKA State Fair. Yeah.
Could you paint us a general picture of it, please?
Sure. This Great Pumpkin Festival will be, again, October 8th from 10 to 5. We're looking at, we have several contests. We have one for harvest, so people can submit a variety of harvests, not just pumpkins or other members of the gourd family. Anything that they have grown, they can bring in as a contest for the largest vegetable.
And remember, if it didn't fruit well this year, then bring in the vine. There's all different things. We're interested in statistics. Is it long? Is it tall? And it's the first year, so anything goes.
We also have a culinary category for the festival, and we have 10 different categories under culinary. So it's baked items. We have cakes and pies and cookies and savory, just 10 different items in the culinary contest.
Yeah, it must be from scratch, a platter or 16-ounce minimum, but be creative. Anything goes. Main ingredient, your favorite winter squash.
So it's open to all gourds?
That one's open to all gourds, yeah, as long as winter squash. It's similar to a pumpkin, hard shell, you know, hard rind. Yeah. Then I can't forget the pie-eating contest.
That's probably getting the most hullabaloo. People are very interested in the pie eating contest. So we will have, I think, 24 seats in the pie eating contest. So that will be in the afternoon. And
I think it's still G-Mom, no hands on that one.
Is this Disney discount?
Yes, they do need to eat all of it. So if too many crumbs fall, then that doesn't work. Out she goes. We can't forget also there's Veg Heads, which is a category adopted from the Palmer State Fair, and that's a sculpture out of vegetables. You can buy your vegetables. Kids can do it, teenagers as well as adults. We have three divisions or sections for that. So be creative, G-rated, and creativity. Great Pumpkin Way Off. We count that there will be pumpkins coming in. The Master Gardeners did a pilot project out at the city greenhouse, and they were growing cucumbers, tomatoes, but also they tried field and Atlantic Giant pumpkins. They had pretty good success inside the greenhouse, just in pots. You know, have the plant in pots. The vines were out on just on the benches. So they'll be entering. We have people from different nooks and corners all the way out the road. It's 20-some mile. People grow pumpkins best they can. I myself was in the Sunday paper, so you could get a little sneak peek of a pumpkin peeking out from under rhubarb-sized leaves.
So. About how big is your pumpkin now?
Pretty small. Pretty small for me is like, well, I'd say this one is 10, 15 pounds. You know, and it's a poor year. But my vine is 30 feet long, so I might be one of those people. I just want to see what grows, and maybe you'll see my vine instead of my pumpkin at the fair.
What inspired the event?
Well, myself and I talked to other people. We were looking at showing up at a state fair or seeing what people grow. And the state fair locally in Haines has been getting earlier and earlier over the years. It used to be late August, so you could sort of grow something, and then it crept up until now it's in mid-July. So we wanted to see some of these late crops, you know, who grows what. I know people grow artichokes or Jerusalem artichokes, Brussels sprouts, all these things that take well into September or even the beginning of October to harvest. So we want to see that happen. So all these little hidden gardens, people come out of their gardens and show us what you grow. And let's celebrate with that. The other aspect is just having a state fair and appreciating people on what they do. So this year it's a smaller start, but we'd like to also admire what people are creative with in culinary, how they can be crazy maybe in some of the other divisions, whether it's sculpturing or pie eating contests, displays, sharing some of their how-to knowledge, local knowledge on how to grow things, how to dry or preserve food, and some of the youth groups. If we have it late enough, we'd like to see youth groups come out. They can either present on stage what they're doing. I think we have, right now, we may have a cheerleader, a troupe come out. And these are the small cheerleaders. They're what? How old?
These are the Cub cheerleaders. So they're first, second, third grade.
Aww.
And so they're gonna do their demonstration that they will be performing later in October. So we are looking at, you know, different forms of entertainment and different presentations. We want someone growing, but then just it's a community event. So
yeah.
Different organizations that represent the community. So if you're part of an organization who would like to either do a demonstration or a performance of some type, to contact us so that we can get them on the schedule for performing that day.
Yes, definitely. And we invite youth groups. We'll have displays from them. So people are invited to, with their group, to create a display of what projects they're working on, whether it's growing or some other activity that they're involved in, a display so the community can see, and that's on poster board. We'll have some interactive displays. And we invite the nonprofit youth groups as well to have bake sales at the event to kick off some fundraising. Aside from that, we'll have fair food. So we're expecting people to sit down if they can and enjoy some good food, some good old-fashioned entertainment, you know, so and have some fun. Yeah.
Why pumpkins and not potatoes or garlic?
Oh, why pumpkins? Well, everyone has their little, if they grow things, they have their little enjoyment or specialty plant. And I've found that the pumpkin is quite a challenge here in Juneau. You have sometimes better luck even in Anchorage. You need a little bit of heat or some clear days under plastic so you gather up the heat. And here in Juneau, it's pretty exciting because you never know what goes with the pumpkins. This was a cool year. I could barely get my pollen to mature and burst out, you know, to be fluffy so I could pollinate my plants. So this was a crazy year to try to get anything to pollinate. So it's a real challenge. It's like for a mountaineer climbing a mountain, a pumpkin is one of those plants that is one of those challenge plants here. And it brings joy and creativity and growing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Been talking to Brenda Krause and Joe Dawson about the Great Pumpkin Festival, which is happening on Saturday, October 8th at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center from 10 o'clock until 5 in the afternoon. And you have something to just share with us here?
Yes. yes, I wrote a ditty for the end so that we can remind you about things. It's fall, and Juneau's first Great Pumpkin Festival. It's fall, time for Juneau's first Great Pumpkin Festival. Put pump in your kin, come to Juneau's first Great Pumpkin Festival. Keep the date, it's great, October 8th at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. That's 10 to 5 on October 8th at the Old Armory Building near Centennial Hall. Come one, come all.
All right, thank you so much, Joe Dawson and Brenda Krause.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 20th of September, 2011. It's the birthday of the sci-fi and fantasy writer George R.R. Martin, born 1948, Bayonne, New Jersey. Time magazine named him one of the 100 most influential people in the world this year, called him the American Tolkien, most famous for his series A Song of Ice and Fire, an epic fantasy series recently adapted for HBO's drama Game of Thrones, which was the title of the first volume in the series. It's the birthday of the editor Maxwell Perkins, New York City, 1884. Graduated from Harvard, went to work at Scribner's, which was a publishing house that usually hired people from Princeton. Perkins set out to find new young writers, and his first major acquisition was a St. Paul writer named F. Scott Fitzgerald. His book, This Side of Paradise, came out in 1920. Fitzgerald then recommended to Perkins a writer named Ernest Hemingway, and Perkins got Scribner's to publish Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises, which was considered profane for the time. Maxwell Perkins fell fatally ill with pneumonia in 1947. His wife called an ambulance to their home. There was an attendant who came up with a stretcher to carry the sick man down, and Perkins told his daughter to deliver two manuscripts, which were on his nightstand, deliver them to his secretary for safekeeping. The manuscripts were Cry, The Beloved Country, and From Here to Eternity. And it's the birthday of the muckraker and novelist Upton Sinclair, born Baltimore, 1878. Father was an alcoholic. Family was in dire straits. From the time the boy was 17, he supported himself by writing. He became a member of the Socialist Party, and he wanted to write about injustice in his fiction. He was commissioned by a socialist magazine to write about the plight of immigrants working in meatpacking houses in Chicago, and he moved to the Stockyards district for 7 weeks, took notes on miserable working conditions, came back and wrote his novel The Jungle, which was published in the magazine in installments. The book was rejected by a number of publishers because it was rather graphic, a lot of blood and guts in it. But Doubleday swooped in at the last minute, agreed to publish it. It came out in 1906, The Jungle. Upton Sinclair intended to write about the mistreatment of the workers, but readers reacted instead to his descriptions of the mistreatment of the animals, the food, the unsanitary preparation of meat, and the outcry that the book raised helped to pass the Pure Food and Drugs Act. Here's a poem for today by Leo Dangle, The Love Nest. Well, I don't care, Denise, if you didn't win the Dairy Princess pageant. By the time we're married next spring, the new house on the farm will be finished with a double garage for your car and my pickup. We'll panel the basement with walnut veneer or maple and tear down the old house when my old man moves to town. There'll be a new steel barn and another harvester silo. You know as well as I do, Denise, you could hardly ask for a better deal. You're beautiful, Denise, and I think if I bit into your shoulder right now, you'd taste like watermelon. A poem by Leo Dangle, The Love Nest, from Home from the Field, published by Spoon River Poetry Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by CenturyLink, a new kind of broadband company linking Americans coast to coast with consistently fast speeds and personal service. More at CenturyLink.com. And by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Schweitzer. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:20, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Yvonne Reese, a board member of Rainforest Yoga. They're having a series of fundraisers coming up to raise floor for their raise money for a bamboo floor fundraiser called Bamboo Asana. Yvonne, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a great opportunity.
So tell me about Rainforest Yoga, if you could, please.
Rainforest Yoga is a nonprofit yoga center here in town, and that was something that really drew me first to Rainforest Yoga is the fact that they were a nonprofit, and they had a pay-as-you-can policy, which I really appreciated that that meant the yoga center was open to the community, you know, that you didn't have to have a lot of money to practice yoga. So, and it is located above Nickelodeon Theater in the Emporium Mall, so above Nickelodeon Theater and also above the Heritage that's on Franklin Street, so in that same building, just the stairs up above. So,
what types of yoga are offered?
Oh, it depends on the type of year. We have kind of this evolving program, and we'll have special instructors that will come in and teach certain types. So we have level 1 through level 3. Right now there's a level 2, 3 being offered, which level 1 is more of a beginning, and a 2 is kind of intermediate, and 3 you're starting to get into more of the advanced postures. And then we also sometimes have forest yoga practice, which is one of my favorites, and we'll have some Ashtanga also that's offered sometimes. We'll have kind of an Ashtanga-based classes, and we also have some that are more relaxation and meditative, like Kundalini. Well, we have Kundalini classes offered now and then, which works with your energy, and it all depends on what you're looking for. You can basically make these classes what you need to take out of the class that day. You can make it your own, I like to think.
What makes some of these styles different, or what makes them similar?
Some of them are a more active practice. For example, Ashtanga is a very active practice that you could consider more of a cardio workout, and you're almost constantly moving, and it's not a yoga style that you would consider really a gentle yoga or relaxation yoga. It's more of an intense, you really work up a sweat, the room gets hot. I mean, it's a great release sometimes. And then there's other gentle yoga styles, or, you know, a level 1 that might be a little bit more slow paced, and that may be just what you're looking for that day. It all depends on the style. Forest yoga, you're working more with injuries, trying to recover from injuries, and it's got some great core workout to it, abdominal. So just depends on what you're looking for, but I think you can find just about anything, you know, depending on the time of year there at Rainforest Yoga.
Is it difficult, stressful, or taxing?
Depends on the class. No, I wouldn't call any of the classes stressful. You know, I guess there can be a little bit of anxiety wondering if you're going to be able to do a certain posture, but you just have to let that go and kind of laugh about it if you can't. You know, you just make it your own. But taxing, no. I mean, some of it can be, it can require some exertion. Yeah, but I don't think mentally taxing. I think it's a great type of exertion that's a stress reliever. So
you're saying postures, and I'm thinking pretzels.
No, we don't do too many pretzel. There are some pretzel postures, yeah, but a lot of it is just more, I mean, anybody can do yoga. It all depends on the class, but I don't care your body type, your ability, and we can all start someplace. And most of it does not involve getting into pretzel-like postures. That would be more the advanced classes that would be doing that. And there's always modifications. The instructors will say, you can do this, or if you'd like to, if you have the flexibility and would like to continue on, you know, they'll give different modifications. And so some of the class will be doing, you know, the more pretzel-like posture like you were talking, and some will be holding back and staying in the place that is healthy for their body. So, and the instructors are really good about watching that, and they can kind of tell your abilities watching you, you know, and a good instructor can kind of set the pace depending on the yogi ability that they have in the class.
What's the basic philosophy of yoga?
Well, I can give you a really good definition, which I think, you know, I went and looked this up just because I thought, oh, I wouldn't be able to define it do it much justice. But a good definition is an ancient discipline which includes breath control, simple meditation, and the adoption of specific bodily postures that is widely practiced for health and relaxation. So while yoga's roots are in the Eastern religion, yoga is a system of self-care that can be practiced by anyone of any or no religion. So I feel like you can take away what you want. You can take away the spiritual aspects, you can take away the physical aspects, or you can take away the relaxation. You can take one or you can take all of that. You don't have to be religious or Hindu to practice yoga.
I'm talking with Yvonne Reese, a board member of Rainforest Yoga, about the Bamboo Asana fundraiser coming up. Can you want to talk to you about the fundraiser, please?
Sure. Yeah, right now we are raising funds in order to install a bamboo floor in the Rainforest Yoga Center. And we have this really generous contractor that has offered to do the installation free. We just need to be able to raise the money to buy the materials. Right now in the yoga center we have kind of a indoor-outdoor carpeting, and you lay out your mats on this carpeting, and you know, the carpeting, it's still in good condition, but just optimal yoga is done on a wood floor, and bamboo is great because it's antimicrobial, it is sustainably harvested, it is a grass, and so they can harvest it over and over, and we just feel like, and it would also just, we were calling it enlivening our studio, it would make it beautiful, so just a really nice place to practice. So, you know, it would benefit all the students that attend classes there. And so we are doing a fundraiser for this bamboo floor. So for the next month through October 8th, we've got special weekly classes offered to where all the money generated during those classes will go directly towards our floor. And the teachers have generously offered to teach these classes free of charge. And so all the money that is made goes towards our floor installation. So we're hoping to raise enough money and install the floor in the next few months.
What's the typical class cost?
Typical class costs $14. Well, no, for this fundraiser, the classes, we're asking for a donation of $20 for these classes for the fundraiser. But there is still the pay-as-you-can option. So somebody could come. Somebody wants to come try yoga and just cannot afford it or can only afford to pay $5, you know, come, take the class. So your typical class that is not part of the fundraiser are $14. Unless you're a member, which is $25 a year, you can become a member, and then you can buy a coupon book. And the coupon book with the coupons, it comes out to about $12 a class. So, and every class is the pay-as-you-can option. So.
And how long are the classes typically?
The classes typically are an hour and a half, but we do have a few classes offered during the week that are maybe during lunchtime that are only an hour. So.
All right, if people want to take part in the fundraiser, Bamboo Asana, tell me, what is asana?
Asana is a posture. So most of the yogic postures will have the term asana at the end. So we just decided to be kind of cute and clever and make it Bamboo Asana. So.
And also, it's clever.
Well, thank you. And on our website, we've got a flyer on our website where you can find all the classes and times. And there's different classes. It depends. You know, we've got one class that's an ease into fall solstice, or they all have different themes. One is building a self-practice, and one is called From the Ground Up. So they're all different themes. So check out the Rainforest website, which is rainforestyoga.org. So for the information.
Is there a phone number at all for it?
Oh,
I couldn't find one in the phone book.
We do have a phone number. Let me see. It's 723-3283.
All right, and you have some workshops coming up in October.
We do. We have one workshop coming up in October that I just like to tell everybody about, too. And that we've got a visiting guest instructor coming into town. It is October 14th through 16th. His name is Les Leventhal, and he's from the San Francisco Bay Area. And he came last year, and I attended that workshop, and it was wonderful. It was a great opportunity. He's a lot of fun. So let me tell you, I'm going to read you just a little bit about Les, just because I won't remember all this, but he... guest teacher Les Leventhal, one of San Francisco's most popular and sought-after teachers, will be in Juneau to offer a dynamic and inspirational vinyasa yoga class, which vinyasa means flow, where we flow from one posture or position into another. So yoga with Les is a vinyasa flow yoga practice, as I said, and his workshop will be filled with all the basic technique and alignment cues you will need to get your practice started. This is a class that can work for a beginner or an advanced. He was great about giving different modifications that you could use. And I mean, there were some advanced instructors that attended this, and you know, they were in some great pretzel postures, but not everybody was. I mean, he was very careful about giving different alternatives to people and watching the group to see, you know, what their abilities were. So, and the workshop, let me see, will start, it starts on a Friday night, and I don't have specific times yet. That will be on our website in the next couple of days. I don't have specific times, but it normally goes 2 hours on Friday night, and then there's usually a three-hour class Saturday morning, a two-hour class Saturday afternoon, and then another three-hour class Sunday morning, and a two-hour class Sunday afternoon. I believe that's how it'll go. And two of the classes will be training classes for yoga teachers and other interested students that are interested in taking a teacher's training. So it's really a great opportunity. And I've got here, Les's Yoga will give you an opportunity to heal your heart, laugh, and cry, dance, and just let go. And I thought it was extremely rewarding, you know, to do that weekend. I felt really good coming away with it, so away from it. So I just encourage anybody that's interested in yoga, try out Les Leventhal. He's quite the instructor.
All right, Yvonne Reese, thank you for coming by and talking about Bamboo Asana, the fundraiser for Rainforest Yoga. That phone number one more time, please, if you could.
Let's see. It is 723-3283. And okay. Also check out our website because it's got all this information, and we'll have the information about Les on there soon.
Thank you for coming by.
Thank you very much.
Time is 3:35, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon, where our next guest is Lance Twitchell from the University of Alaska Southeast. He's an assistant professor of native languages, and he's here to talk about a native film series which is coming up. Lance, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Goodness, geez.
Can you give me an overview of the Native Studies program, please?
Yeah, the Native Studies program is something that we're really building at the University of Alaska Southeast. Right now, it's a combination between anthropology, arts, English, and so when you look at Alaska Native Studies, it's really something that's interdisciplinary and is a fairly new field. But what we see at University of Alaska Southeast is a chance to really grow something so that, as Juneau is the cultural hearth of the Tlingit culture, and as Southeast is the area of the Tlingit, Tsimshian, and Haida people, we want UES to be the place to come to study these cultures and also to look at Alaska Native cultures and other indigenous areas and look at things and really kind of look at what's going on in terms of identity, the ability to give serious academic study and not to give definitions of what people or groups might be, but to see what those people and groups say of themselves. And so it's sort of a chance for this program to grow and to really become something. So if someone wants to study Northwest Coast Native art, they don't have to go somewhere else to study it, but this becomes the place. And so that's what we're looking at with building our Alaska Native Studies program.
Lance, where did you grow up?
I was born in Skagway, Alaska, and then grew up mostly in Anchorage.
Well, what classes are you teaching?
Right now I'm teaching Alaska Native Cultures, which meets Monday, Wednesday, Friday at noon, and Elementary Tlingit 1, which is Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 5:30.
Are more of your students Native than non-Native, or how does that, what's the percentage work out?
That's a great question. I would probably say it might be majority Native at this point, but it seems to be just about half and half, which is fantastic. We've got really good numbers for Elementary Tlingit right now, and it just, I'm so excited to see that people are interested in learning this language and studying it. It's such a beautiful and complex language that you can just study it your entire life, and you'll always be finding something new and fantastic about it.
Is it easier to teach somebody who's heard a little bit of it growing up or somebody who's never heard it before?
Well, I think it's hard to teach it, and it's hard to learn it. One of the things that have been stressed by the Dauenhauers and many other people who teach languages is you're not going to get it unless you just practice, practice, practice. You really have to find students that have not just a surface commitment, but they have a deep commitment to say, well, I'm going to just drill these words and just commit them to my memory. And, you know, and that's one of the hard parts is it's all memorization and then starting to figure out patterns and then making predictions and being wrong a lot. But then if someone is committed and can see their own level of growth, then, you know, you could start to say, you're going to connect with the ancestors of this place, whether that person is Tlingit or anything else. The fact that that individual is living here, they're on the ancestral land of the Tlingit people, and if you learn this language, you're going to get a better understanding of place, relationships, and what this area has been like up until now.
You grew up hearing your grandfather speak Tlingit. At what point did you want to devote much of your life to studying it?
My grandfather was a pivotal figure in my life. His Tlingit name was Gushtihin, and his English name was Cy Dennis Sr. And ever since I was really little, it seemed like we had this just very powerful connection. And when he began to teach me Tlingit, he would say the words for thing. He'd point and say, "Eh." And then I would try to say it, and he would laugh at me. And my goal was to keep him from laughing at me, because he just had a great sense of humor. And we probably have different teaching methods. But that became something that we sort of bonded over, is that he was going to teach me Tlingit. And then I was in my undergraduate program at the University of Minnesota, and I had plans to take a semester off and just stay home and study with him. And then he said, "No, just finish your school. You only got a little bit left." Well, he called me about halfway through my second to last semester at the University of Minnesota, and he said, "Come home." And I said, "Well, I'm almost done. I've got 1.5 semesters left." He said, "Come home." I said, "Oh, I'll be there in a little bit." And then a couple months later, he passed away. And I really harbored that guilt and I carried that guilt around. But then I went to Ketchikan. I started taking language classes with Esther Shea and other classes with Priscilla Schulte and others. And then I was a bit lost. But what I found is by purchasing Beginning Tlingit and listening to these tapes and walking around in different places and just trying to memorize words, as I discovered that became my new connection to my grandfather and my way to sort of keep him in my life. And then from there, I started to realize just the overall state of indigenous languages worldwide, but especially in North America and in Alaska. And then it became a real passion to just see what I could do to with this language. And that's something I like my students to realize is every word that you speak, every time you use this language, even if you're getting things wrong and you're just learning, you're changing the world in that moment. You're creating a space where this language lives again.
I'm talking to Lance Twitchell from the University of Alaska Southeast about a native film series which is coming up. Lance, what are some of the films in the series, or how many films are there?
Yeah, in the film series, we have about 7 films, and they're in about 6 different, or 4 or 5 different occurrences. So the films are Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. It's every other week, starting this week. And in this Alaska Native Cultures class, it's divided into different cultural groups. And the idea is to say, you know, here's a basic cultural group, and you've got a lot of diversity within that group. But, you know, we could still look and say, well, this is a group and that's a group. And one thing I wanted to do is to spend a couple weeks with the class talking about the group, have the class give a short presentation, and then sort of closing out with a film, because I think there's great films that are out there. And if you look at documentaries or cinema, there's something special going on there. Same with in different texts, where instead of this external voice talking about what Native people are or are not, you have this more internal voice that's rising. And I think you could see that in the films that were selected for this series.
What are the names of the films?
Let's see, on September 22nd, we have Aleut Story. October 6th, Finding Their Own Dance, Reawakening Alaskan Aleutic Arts. October 20th, The Drums of Winter. November 3rd is Antanarjuat, The Fast Runner. November 17th is Make Prayers to the Raven. And we close on December 1st with our triple header of Hashagun, The Surviving Sounds of Haida, and Carved from the Heart.
Are these films open to the public?
Yes, these events are at the Egan Lecture Hall, Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. They're free and open to the public. We really encourage people to come down to UAS and to be a part of this. There'll be short discussions afterwards if folks want to stay. Those will involve the class, be led by some of the class members. And so it's a chance to sort of take what we're doing at UAS and try and bring the community in and to share these moments of these are great films. I think they're great things to sort of to take a look at and to learn about these different cultures in Alaska.
Lance, why are you teaching Tlingit? Why is it important to you and your culture?
Tlingit is important to me because of there are certain things that were said to me as I learned, as I started studying this language. And one of them was by a man named Walter Austin, who said, the land and the language are like veins and arteries. He said they're intertwined. And as I look at the way our people have lived before and live now, I'm just always curious about what we're going to become. I'm curious about where we're going to be 20 years from now. We've got this pocket of speakers right now. And I'm very curious what's going to happen as we continue to lose speakers, but we're not gaining them fast enough. And it's been said at different conferences, at meetings, in different formats, that our languages are dying, they're going to be gone. And I'm just very concerned that that's going to happen. And so I teach the language because the language teaches me. When I start to talk about things within the language, I'm realizing that there's a great possibility that someone's speaking through me, and then I'm tapping into this larger pot of knowledge that's inaccessible if you don't know the language. And it's interesting, it's an interesting argument about whether the culture lives when the language dies or whether it doesn't. And I'm also well aware that our languages are in a certain state. because there were very calculated and directed movements to remove these languages from their place. And there's something, it's an incredible thing, not in a good way, when a language dies in the place where it was born. And so it's one of my goals just to see what I can do to make sure that doesn't happen with the Tlingit language.
Lance Twitchell from the University of Alaska Southeast, thank you so much for being on the show today. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I can't think of anything. I hope people are excited about this film series and that they can make it out. We're really hoping to get a good attendance at this and to continue doing things like this in the future.
And if people need more information, is there a phone number they can call?
Oh, absolutely. They can they can reach me at latwitchell@uas.alaska.edu or just call the university.
All right, Lance, thank you so much for being on the air with me today. Gunashish.
Considering other educational options for your student? Then consider HomeBridge, a program that builds the link between school and home by allowing up to 2 classes at local high schools with no allotment reduction and make sports, theater, and other activities possible within the Juneau School District. HomeBridge offers parents a direct educational connection with their K to 12th grader. HomeBridge, Juneau's hometown homeschool, 209 Home.
The time is 3:49 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest here from the Juneau School District, Kristen Bartlett and Dale Staley, here to talk about the voluntary drug testing program, now in its third year. Kristen and Dale, thank you so much for coming down to the station today.
Great to be here, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
So can you give us an overview of the policy, please?
Sure. About 3 years ago, there was a Board of Education task force that was formed over the summer, and out of that task force came a number of different initiatives in the school district. One was a mandatory drug testing program for athletes, an enhancement of drug curriculum and community involvement, and then a voluntary drug testing program for all high school students if they wish to participate.
And how does it work?
Well, students can sign up at any of our three high schools, and once they sign up, they get a card that's an identification card for participation. That card has incentives on it, discounts or prizes from local businesses. They're put into the system, the drug testing program, and that randomly can be called to be drug tested at any time during the school year. And then on a monthly and quarterly basis, there are prizes given for those who are participating, and all of those prizes are donated by local businesses and individuals in our community.
Sounds like it's one of those projects that couldn't be done without the help of local people.
Absolutely.
It takes a lot of people, yeah. A lot of concerned people about what's happening with kids in our community and making sure that we keep them on the right track.
Seems like it's more of a preventative than a punishment.
It's definitely not a punishment. It is a preventive, and the businesses are involved in providing an incentive to help those kids say no when they're encouraged to participate in the use of illicit drugs.
Yeah, it's really a proactive way for kids to step forward and say no.
But what percentage of the student population is taking part in it?
Well, last year we had between 250 and 300 students, and we have about 1,500 high school students in the district.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good number.
And confidentiality is a big plus, I'm sure.
It is a big plus, but the incentives are a big plus for kids, too, especially in the voluntary program. I know I've had students come to me that I know have had issues with drugs before, and they say, can I participate in this program? And I said, well, are you clean? And they may say yes, they may say no, depending on, you know, when they were using last. And I say, well, you can participate. We need to help the testing agency understand that, you know, you may not be clean for the first test that you get called up for, but we'll work through that with you. And as long as you start getting more of it out of your system and still participate in the program, you're in there for the prizes, and when the drawings come, hopefully your number will come up.
Tell me about the test itself.
The test itself it's actually a urine sample as well as a saliva swab. And so it's a pretty quick test. Takes about 15 minutes from the time the student leaves the classroom until they're back to the classroom. There are, I think, seven or eight different chemicals that are tested for, including tobacco and alcohol. Of course, marijuana and other over-the-counter or illicit drugs. And we know who's being tested, like 24 hours before the test is administered. We have no idea what the results are. Those are confidential. They're kept between the testing agency and the student's parent.
How much of a problem is there in drug use in high school these days?
And not as much as we've had in the past, and I attribute a lot of that to the programs that we have in place for testing in the district now.
You said the voluntary one is for everybody, and there's a mandatory one for athletes?
Yes.
How does it seem to work across the country?
Well, that's a good question. I know that when we instituted the policy here in Juneau, we certainly had a lot of inquiries from other districts around Alaska. I believe that in Ketchikan and in Sitka, they do drug testing for athletes, and it is growing in popularity around the country.
And one of the reasons you're here today is to encourage local businesses to take part in the program.
That's right. Last year we had 32 businesses that contributed over $7,400 in cash and prizes for students. So it was a wonderful outpouring of support from the community. And, you know, it really makes a difference to students and young people to know that other people in the community care about whether or not they take care of themselves and have a safe and drug-free environment in their schools. So we really appreciate the contributions from businesses. Even though we had 32, there were two people who were really integral in getting this off the ground, this voluntary drug testing program. And those people were Leslie Dahl and Mitch Falk, business leaders who have really helped promote this program in the business community and have been very supportive of the school district as we get going.
And that's one part of the program that we don't keep confidential. We advertise what businesses are contributing to the program. We provide a poster for them to display at their place of business so that the community members will recognize the fact that this is a business that is supporting our youth and being drug-free. And it's one of the things we're very proud of.
Do you have an avid list of the businesses right here?
Well, we have a list of the businesses that contributed last year on our website. And this year we are still in the contribution process, so as soon as we get that list together, we'll be updating it. All information about the drug testing programs, both mandatory and voluntary, as well as a list of all of our partners from last year, are on the Juneau School District website at junoschools.org. If you click on the Parents tab, there's a page called Drug Testing Program.
And if a business wants to help out, how can they do so easiest?
They can go to that page, and there's a link to our business partner page, and they can fill out a form and send it on in, or they can give us a call. And parents and students can also get forms on that same page.
And I've been talking to Kristen Bartlett and Dale Staley from the Juneau School District about the voluntary drug testing program. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't think so, Jeff. Thanks.
Appreciate you giving us this opportunity to communicate with the community about what we're doing into schools.
How's school doing this year?
School's going great this year. We're off to a great start, and students are doing really well.
Wrestled any candy machines lately?
Nope.
All right. Dale Daly and Kristen Bartlett, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tune to K276 AF at 103.1. At Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hunet at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with organizers involved with Saturday's Coast Guard Family Association's 70th party. Katrina Pearson from Hearthside Books will be here to talk about book groups and also Banned Books Week. We'll tackle the subject of high school football, and we'll get a preview of some of this weekend's live music offerings with Sean McCoy and Joe Carson. At Writer's Almanac Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Don't forget tomorrow night's League of Women Voters Juneau Municipal Candidate Forum. Tomorrow night from 7 to 9 live from the Assembly Chambers on KTOO News. Weather forecast for tonight, rain, low temperatures around 48 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday looks like more rain with high temperatures around 53 degrees. Rain heavy at times is a prediction for Wednesday night, with Thursday less rain likely with high temperatures around 52 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for being here with me on a Juneau afternoon today. Have a good evening. Et le soleil va briller encore une fois.
Thank you.